Johnny Karras, Buddy Young, Alex Agassi, Red Grange, Harold Pogue. Great names in football history, Fighting Illini who helped build a tradition of outstanding athletic achievement. Names stretching back to the days when football attracted a mere handful of fans. Today, almost every kid in the block owns a pigskin, colleges thrive on gate receipts, and thousands of eager fans look forward to the approaching season when football is king. Yes, it's Welcome Back Football, the favorite sport of millions. Chrysanthemums, cheering throngs, blotches of bright colors, fall leaves, and waving pennants. It's in the blood of every fan who's cheered his alma mater on to victory or lived through a bitter defeat. During the next few minutes, we're going to call on some of the experts and glance back on the highlights of football at Illinois. You'll hear from Coach Ray Elliott, Bob Zupke, Team Captain Bill Vohaska, noted sports writer Arch Ward with his Big Ten prediction for 1950, and many other personalities joining our rousing Welcome Back to Football. Football came to Illinois about 1888. Prior to that time, baseball and oratory had been the only fields of competition among colleges, and very few people were enthusiastic about this new sport. A handful of spectators was considered a crowd, and some of the players were known to wear derby hats. Such was football 62 years ago. Illinois played its first games on Old Illinois Field. The grandstand seated 300 people, and it was the pride of the undergraduate body. But soon the football games began attracting larger audiences than the debate teams. First thing people knew, a halfback by the name of Harold Pogue had his name on every sports page, and 5 years later it was a tackle named Bert Ingwersen who was attracting national attention. Illinois Field wasn't much in comparison to some of the great stadiums of the day. Harvard built its magnificent horseshoe, and Yale swung the great gray circle of its bowl into student and alumni life. At Illinois, men like Robert C. Zupke visioned a greater project. They saturated the Illini campus with a spirit of sportsmanship and vitality. Then a mass meeting was called to launch a drive for funds for a stadium. Appeals by George Huff and Coach Bob Zupke brought thunders of applause, and 6,000 students contributed $700,000 the first day. The first $1,000 was contributed by a dark-haired, dark-eyed youth, R.L. Cavalcanti, from Latin America. In a fever of excitement came $1,000 offers from Princess Tarhata Kiram of Sulu, from J.C. Aguilar of Tampico, and $500 offers from everywhere in the Great Hall. Robert F. Carr, $10,000. Albert Moore, $1,000. Avery Brundage, $1,000.
The contributions poured in from students, alumni, friends to build this living memorial to Illini war dead, the University of Illinois Memorial Stadium. The dedication was a glorious occasion as 66,609 fans crowded the stadium to see a red-haired Iceman from Wheaton, Illinois, stamp himself as one of the greatest football players of all time, East or West.
That was October 18, 1924. One of those good old days that you hear about so often. And who knows better than the old Dutch master himself, Coach Robert C. Zupke.
Yes, I should remember it very well. It was a hot, sunny day. And as we came out to prepare for the game and warm up, I thought this was much too warm a day for such a purpose. So I called the boys back into the dressing room, and I asked them to take off their stockings. Well, Red was not so sure about taking them off, but he finally did. And when we came out, of course, it was quite a surprise to see the glaring bare legs, because at that time, people were unaccustomed to it. Even to this day, the pros make their boys wear stockings. And one official ran up and felt the boys' legs, suspecting grease, so they would be slippery to tackle.
I wonder if you'd tell us a little bit about the time that Grange scored the 4 touchdowns in 12 minutes in that very game. Just how did Red feel about it?
Well, I don't know how Red felt about it. Probably he was so surprised he had no feelings left. In fact, we were all stunned. because Michigan was a great team. And when he carried the kickoff 96 or 7 yards without being touched, everybody was astounded, and the president of Michigan, who sat back of me, stood up, accepting the acclaim, thinking only a Michigan man could perform in such a manner.
Would you say that's the greatest game you've ever coached?
The greatest game I ever saw played, of course, from an Illinois point of view. In fact, it's so great that it has not been forgotten. I hear about it continually. It's one in a century.
And other things that we hear, that you invented Robert C. Zupke, were such famous plays as the flea flicker and the flying trapeze. And you've concocted many more. Would you mind telling us about it?
Well, I used to get bored from doing the same thing over and over again. I hated routine. And so naturally I got busy thinking about plays. And we were in an experimental stage, and we were pioneers, and we had to open up the game and take chances of appearing ridiculous by doing it. And for example, when it took 10 years before the spiral pass from center became popular, and that, although it was born in Muskegon, Michigan, a championship team of Illinois had to make it popular. It took 5 years to make the huddle popular. In fact, when we first put it over here at Illinois, for 2 years, we were ridiculed because of the huddle. I remember Mrs. Upke took a little girl to the game, and the little girl said, Mrs. Upke, why has Illinois so many secrets? The other team hasn't any. And they used to think it delayed the game. Now the huddle is so important that pro football could not exist without it, because of the opponents would hear the signals. Since they trade players, the traded player would recognize his own signal, but in the huddle of his opponents, he can't hear it.
Coach Zupke, you were also the originator of spring football practice and coaching clinics, were you not?
Well, I don't know whether I was the originator of spring football, but there may have been others, but that's all I knew. I wasn't too well acquainted those days. I came from high school directly to college and thought of spring football. And what was that other question?
About the coaches' clinic.
The coaches' clinic? Well, Mr. Huff suggested we have a coaching school. But I had gone up to Chicago to the American College of Physical Education and had small coaching schools there even during my Oak Park days. So I don't know whether they were where they originated. I don't think we were the originators. We were the first to put it over on a large scale.
Let's bring football up now to the modern plane and talk a little bit about two platoon football. Do you think that's good or bad for the great sport of football?
Platoon football is all right if you have the men. But it makes the college game the most unfair sport in the world, because so many schools have not enough men for a platoon system, yet they must play that game that afternoon, and one man may be playing against two all afternoon, and that is not right. Of course, there's nothing much you can do about it. For instance, if you're at Michigan and you have enough men, if you're a smart coach, you'll use the platoon system. The same at Illinois.
Zupp, I've heard you say many times before that Red Grange was the greatest player you've ever coached in your many years of football coaching. Now, John Karras is one of Illinois' big stars this year. He hopes to lead the Fighting Illini to a great season in 1950. In comparing the two, what would you say about Karras, and what would you say about Red Grange?
Well, you understand, comparisons are odious, but I will try. Karras is a heavier man and a heavier runner. He plants his foot firmer and probably has more power pressure forward. But he is not as fast or quite as elusive. He has a very able way of spinning and stuttering just about when he's to be tackled. And I've seen him saw him destroy the timing of 2-3 tacklers all at the same time and make them fall flat on their faces. And often when they come to hit him, they do not hit him right because he has a a peculiar upright stance, which is neither going forward nor backward. And since they expect him to hit him and he does not, they are surprised and fall flat.
Red had great speed, though, didn't he, Red Grange?
Red had tremendous speed. In fact, I think if Red had gone out for track, he would have been the greatest sprinter of all time. Now, of course, that's in the realm of opinion.
Zeb, one last question. Do you feel that a team being rated high before the season gets underway hurts their efficiency throughout the year?
Not necessarily. Whatever we say in that direction is merely based on conjecture. But if a boy begins to rate himself too high, he may not be able to live up to that. And also, if a team is rated high, the public, the alumni, may expect a lot of them. And that hurts them if they do not come through.
Illinois won or shared 7 Big Ten championships under Zupke. The hero of 1,000 perfect plays becomes a bum after one error. A coach is responsible to an irresponsible public. Football is to college life as good color is to a painting. It makes college life throb and vibrate. Zupkeisms, they were called, and they became the bywords of football. In 1942, when Zupp resigned, Ray Elliott, an Illini himself, was named to succeed him as head coach. By concentrating on detail and inspiring his squad with the fighting heart, his first Illinois team upset mighty Minnesota. Since then, Elliott has added, through personality and leadership, a solid character to his teams that has commanded the respect of other conference schools. Confronted by small, inexperienced Illini teams and hampered by the effects of war on college football material, Elliott brought Illinois their first Big Nine championship in 18 years and climaxed at New Year's Day 1947 by routing a highly favored UCLA 11 in the Rose Bowl 45-14. The next year brought a three-way tie for third place in the conference standings and a battle with Army to a scoreless tie in New York's Yankee Stadium. Offensive power of the Illini in 1949 led the Big Ten in both rushing and total offense. Once ahead for 1950. Let's ask the boss himself, Coach Ray Elliott.
Well, Mike, as far as Illinois is concerned, we have 4 or 5 problems that we've got to solve before we're going to be ready for our schedule. In the first place, we have a problem of punting. Our boys are working out every day on the punting department, and I feel that they're making some progress, but whether or not we're going to match up with the rest of the league is going to be a problem there. The second thing, of course, is the linebacking situation. We lost our 3 best linebackers last fall, and we are trying to repair that situation the best we can. We have Chuck Barrero and Joe Hall, Joe Cole, Bill Vahoska on the right side, and Bill Tate, a sophomore, Eric Kuykendall, a sophomore, and Don Ellis and Eli Popa on the left side. I hope those boys can take the place of the boys that we've lost by graduation. The passing situation, of course, is a doubtful one in our minds because of the fact that new men are throwing that ball this year, and we hope that they can measure up. Of course, we had serious loss in our defensive platoon of last year, losing our left tackle and our 2 regular guards and our linebackers. And, of course, we've got to fix that situation up before we're a strong team.
Coach, how does the rest of the ball clubs in the Big Ten stack up?
Well, Mike, naturally, I don't want to put any school on the spot relative to this race. But I think that there's a certain evenness in the Big Ten this year that hasn't been for some time. I know that Michigan and Ohio State are outstanding. The Michigan losses are negligible because they've had so many fine sophomores come in there to take over and do a swell job. I think the tip-off in Ohio State is the fact that they're taking their star left halfback of last year, Vic Janowitz, and putting him up on the blocking back spot. That means, of course, Mike, they've got a strong team. They've got some splendid backs in there if they can do that. I know Wisconsin's going to be an outstanding team this fall. There was only one serious loss they had last year was Wilson, their linebacker. Everybody else is back, and they've got what Williamson claims is the fastest backfield in the Big Ten. Minnesota's going to have a good team, Mike, from all reports we gather, because if they get some backs, they're going to be fine, and I understand that they've got the backs now. Northwestern, of course, is a much-improved team. They've got a fast backfield, good passing and punting, and a mighty strong line. Indiana's going to be much improved over last year because they've got some very fine backs and a big, husky line and good pass receiving. Iowa, I believe, is going to be much stronger than last year because of their passing, the sturdy line, And the fact that they're bringing Rickett and Riley in the same backfield together is going to make them mighty strong boys. Purdue, from all reports, is going to be a fast team, hard-moving, and they've got a break in the schedule in the sense that the three teams this year they do not meet are Michigan and Minnesota and Illinois, I believe. Their schedule is not quite as strong as some of the other schedules.